Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed, who's actually one of our guests today, and Jerina Martin, an award-winning illustrator. Each week at this time, we visit with an author or someone connected to the writing community. So this week, we have not only the author of a book, but also the illustrator. We find out about their current work, we get a glimpse into their lives, we ask them what prompts them to write or to illustrate, and we have an opportunity to hear them read and talk about their work. So I'm very pleased today to have Felicity and Jerina here to talk to us. Jerina Martin has had a long and distinguished career as an illustrator, winning the Governor General's Award for Illustration in 2009. Of Jerina's illustrations for Bella's Tree, text by Janet Russell, the judges for the Governor General's Award said, Jerina Martin's illustrations invite the reader into a winter landscape full of textures and subtle, earthy color palettes. The Van Gogh-like interior and its warm tones create a holiday season mood that evokes an emotional response. The illustrations are well-crafted and capture the imagination and humanity of the everyday lives they portray. What a lovely thing for them to have said. Though these are done in oil pastel, Jerina also illustrates many of her books with paintings in watercolor. Felicity, our author this week, writes poetry, short fiction, and memoir, and has been published in anthologies, journals, and online. Hidden Brook Press is releasing her novel, Alone, A Winter in the Woods, set right here in Northumberland County in the 18th century. It will be out this month. Of course, she also co-hosts the program with me, as well as chairing the Spirit of the Hills Writers Group that sponsors this program. So let me start with you, Felicity. I know you've spent many years writing this book and produced many drafts, but what inspired the story in the first place?
Well, when I first came to live in Northumberland County, I noticed that there was a cairn down by Presqu'ile Park, which commemorated what is now Brighton's first settler, though at that time the area there was part of Cramie Township, and more generally the Newcastle district. It had not been settled, so because Obadiah was the first settler in that area. And he came to Presqu'ile in the winter over the ice from Adolphustown, and he brought with him his son, who was 12 years old, and some animals. And he stayed in the woods with the boy for 5 or 6 weeks, and they built a cabin. And then he left the boy by himself with the stock to look after and went back to Adolphustown to collect the rest of his family and bring them to the place in the spring when the lake opened up. Well, not all of that was written on the cairn, but enough to pique my interest. And later on, I looked up the story of Obadiah Simpson, and there are several things on the web about him. Situation for that family and the whole quandary that they must have been in just settled in my mind.
And I can't imagine a 12-year-old surviving a winter these days, all on their own.
And so then one has all sorts of other questions that come to mind, you know. I mean, how did the boy himself survive? What kinds of things did he think about the world he was in? And what were the skills he had acquired? Or what things did he know that would allow him to stay alive? So there were so many questions, and they just sort of used to flit in and out of my rather scatterbrained mind, I guess. And then I began to imagine, I think, what kind of boy it would be who would manage this feat. Mm-hmm. So the story started that way, with this young man who sort of grew on me.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not actually an historical account of that particular boy, but it's inspired by a real boy, and then you took it from there and created your own that survived in a similar time.
Yes, it's not a biography of the Simpson family in any kind of way. I did take a few facts about Obadiah's life and travels as the basis for what had happened to the Turner family. They're called the Turners, and they come to set up the homestead. But no, it was fiction, which obviously I wanted to set in the time and keep
and
it
in
fair
the place.
At time and place and right. keep it accurate. But yeah. when you're writing fiction, you use different methods than a historian would do. I guess that's what I
Well, it certainly rings very true. Now, you have done many drafts of this story and over a very long term. So what has kept you going on it all that time?
Well, I think, as I say, it was because as I thought more about John and started to write the story, all these other characters began to appear. For instance, in particular, perhaps, Josephine. Josephine is an orphan that the Turner family have adopted, and she stays with the mother and the little children back in Adolphus Town. And she has a different viewpoint of what's going on from John and his immediate family, because she is an outsider. She's come down from Montreal, and her mother has died in Adolphus Town. So that gave another point of view.
I think it gives a very different historical view, too, because Josephine is French,
mm-hmm.
and Josephine is Catholic,
mm-hmm.
right? Whereas mm-hmm. John is Protestant.
Yes. And so
British.
That's another thing. John meets the preacher, William Black, when they're on their way to the homestead. And he's a circuit rider for the Methodist Church. He just sort of came along as a likely kind of person yeah. they might meet in the woods going somewhere. So he has quite an important role in the story, though, because he gives John a young dog as a present when he discovers that he's going to be alone there for sort of 10 weeks or so. And, of course, the dog and boy story is quite important as part of the novel, and it's more of a character. Bonnie is quite a character, more than the poor old cattle can be, and even Millie the cow, whom John has to help with birthing her calf.
So how would you describe this novel? I mean, it's about a young boy, but is it necessarily a children's adventure story?
Well, he does have adventures, and I hope they're quite exciting. And I hope that it will appeal to young people and make them wonder about life in a different time and place and what it would be like to be in that situation, so different from their mm. own. But I thought perhaps that parents may be interested in that.
Well, I've read the novel, and I think it's more than just parents. It's a fascinating time. I think any adult would be interested because it is such a fascinating concept, this young boy alone in the woods in the Canadian winter and no resources or very few. And I found it fascinating just to compare with my own life today and
yes.
how different it was. So I think it's going to be very hard to say whether this is a children's novel or an adult novel. I think it crosses the generations very differently.
Well, good. I hope it does. I hope it does. I hope it will appeal to people from 8 to 80
yeah.
or more. So it is a story which tries to imagine the thoughts and feelings of a variety of characters. So those are not the only characters. There's an Ojibwe family who comes down to hunt in the marshes when John is on his own and actually has fallen ill with pneumonia. Yeah. So they have a different view too. And John and the Ojibwe boy, Opeachy, form quite a friendship.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, perhaps you can read us a short piece from the novel, okay. Alone, A Winter in the Woods.
This piece comes from the moment when Pa leaves John. They built the cabin, and winter is showing faint signs of leaving. It's the end of February, and Pa doesn't want to miss the ice. If the ice goes out or breaks up, he won't be able to go back to Adolphus Town by the nearest and quickest route. So, in the dawn next morning, as the sun was rising behind the trees and colouring the sky gold, Pa hauled all his equipment outside and started buckling on his snowshoes. John and Bonnie stood on the muddy patch outside the door. As Pa finished, he looked up at John and said, "There's never an end to the advice I could give you. But there's no time left, and we must trust each other to do the best we can in whatever trials we find ourselves." He rose to his feet and reached out to give John a great hug. "Be safe, my son. I'll be back as soon as I may, though how long that will be, only God can tell." John thought for a moment that he'd lost his voice, but after he'd cleared his throat, he managed to say rather croakily, "God be with you, Father, and send you back soon with Mother and the little ones." Bonnie barked, almost as though she knew what was happening, and understood that John's life was about to change completely. John bent down and picked her up. He stroked her warm, squirming body, and she licked his face. He smiled at his father. "I'll do my best here, Pa. Do all the chores and try to find things to keep me busy. Why, when you get back, you'll likely not know the place. It'll be a mansion for sure." Pa wasted no more time. He shook his pack into a better position on his back and stumped off down the little hill towards the long trail to Adolphus Town. As he reached the trees, he turned and waved once before he disappeared. John stared down the slope between the trunks of the maples towards the dark path his father had taken. The forest blurred as his eyes filled. But Bonnie was squirming in his arms again and licking his face, so he swallowed his tears and set her down. She too peered down the slope to where the trail joined the path across their land. For a moment, John thought she might take off after his father, but though she hesitated and barked once, she turned back to him and, jumping up, pulled at his sleeve. John stood still for several minutes in the wet, trampled snow outside the log cabin he and Pa had spent the past weeks building, gazing after his father. He imagined his progress down the gentle slope alongside the ice-choked creek, back on the trail they had travelled together not so many weeks before. If he shut his eyes, he could see again the rough road from the old settlement, often marked only by blazes on the trees and a narrow pathway. Now the hardest, coldest weeks of the winter, when they could walk over the solid ice in the bays of Lake Ontario, were over. Pa would have to hug the shore and pay attention to the state of the ice all the way back to Adolphus Town. When they had set out, the rest of the family had stood in the snow, watching them, their eyes filling with tears, as he and Pa had moved slowly out of sight. Now it was his turn to feel the loneliness of parting.
Oh, poor boy.
Yes, poor boy.
Well, we'll learn a little bit more about the book soon, but first we must take a short break.